Welcome to Coaching the Whole Educator, the podcast that helps instructional coaches, teacher leaders, and school leaders. I'm Becca, former educator and school coach turned transformational coach of coaches. I'm on a mission to help you improve your educators' effectiveness and resilience, especially the ones who need it most. Each week, we'll cover quick tips, strategies, and coaching mindsets so that you can be on top of your coaching game. Are you ready? Let's dive in. And now a quick word from our sponsor. Coaches, we know it might seem like a hassle to gather classroom observation data and be present during a teacher's lesson. What would it be like if that was done for you? The ability to see trends in student talk versus teacher talk, high quality questioning, wait time, and even grade level academic vocabulary could make a big difference in upgrading the quality of instruction. SIBMe has recently upgraded its coaching platform to include all of these capabilities using AI technology. All you have to do is capture video or audio of the lesson using your phone, and SIBMe does the rest. How cool is that? And one of the things I love the most about SIBMe is that it stays all confidential on the platform. Visit SIBMe.com/TWE for your free trial, or click the link in the show notes. Hello, 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 coaches and leaders. I have an extremely knowledgeable guest on today, Todd Churches, and we are going to have a really interesting conversation that's a little different than we usually do. Instead of diving deep into one topic, we're going to talk about lots of topics under the umbrella of visual leadership. So before we jump in, I want to welcome you to the show, Todd.
Thanks, Becca. It's great being with
you. So I'd love just to briefly share, what has been your journey through your career that has led you to what you're doing now within leadership?
So as a kid, working in television was my dream. But when I grew up, I realized I couldn't be a superhero, but I figured I could work in television. So I grew up in New York and I worked in advertising for a year. But then I moved to LA and Hollywood, and I worked in a number of different jobs in TV production, casting. I worked with Disney. I worked for CBS developing TV shows. Then I was a project manager in the theme park business, which I talk about a little bit, my China project in my TED Talk. But what the common theme was in all of these jobs was storytelling and using visual imagery. And I was, even though people assume I was a business major because of what I do as an executive coach, I was actually an English literature major with a concentration in Shakespeare and poetry. So weaving in the arts and the humanities and literature and television into what I do, I teach leadership at NYU in Columbia, and I do executive coaching and leadership development, but all with a visual leadership, visual thinking, visual communication orientation or methodology. So that's how that all kind of comes together.
I love this so much. And your book was so enjoyable to read because it was so visual. And I think that was one of the, I always knew I was a visual learner, but to have such a visual book was like, oh, another page I love. It was just just really enjoyable. So
I wrote the kind of book that I like to read. So all the chapters, yes, are 3 to 5 pages. Each chapter starts with a visual and ends with a thought box question. Yeah. So we're all visual learners and visual thinkers. That's just how our brains are wired. But mm-hmm. I kind of like just blew it up and said, let's just focus on how we can use visuals to be more effective.
I love it. I love it so much. So I want to jump in because there's about 10 topics I want to cover with you. It's going to be like the lightning round here. Yes. So first of all, I want to just, get kind of down in the room. What is visual leadership and why is it actually important that we talk about it and we learn about it?
Sure. So first of all, our brains are wired visually. We take in information through our eyes, but also mainly through our brains, right? We see things with our eyes, but we process them through our brains, and it's just the way our brains are wired. So visual leadership is the application of visual thinking processes to the practice of leadership and management. So I break it down to 4 different categories. So category 1 is using visual imagery, and that could be props, that could be PowerPoint slides, that could be visual language. Anytime you paint a picture with words, that is using visual imagery, words or images. Category 2 is using mental models and frameworks. So a pyramid, a 4-box matrix, a stepladder. Anytime you put something into a diagram or any kind of framework, that is category 2. Category three is using metaphor and analogy, so using visual imagery to communicate or explain something. And then category four is using storytelling with humor, bonus points for humor if and when appropriate, because when you incorporate humor and people are feeling good and laughing, they're more innovative, they're more open and receptive to learning. So those are the four buckets. And when used in combination, it's even more effective.
I love this. And actually, as you're talking, it made me think of some of the work that I do with school leaders in terms of rolling out initiatives. Mm-hmm. Something I started doing years ago was when they would name, I'd say, okay, what are all of your initiatives, right? And it's in schools, we get this thing where it's like, hey, math's important. Wait, and reading. Wait, and STEM. Yeah. Wait, and, you know, they're like all the, you know, and then there's like 10 initiatives, right? Yeah. So I actually had them create an analogy and mm-hmm. a graphic to show their staff how all of it works together in the relationship. I've had a plate of food as one of the analogies or a goldfish bowl as one of the analogies. So yeah, I didn't realize I was doing visual leadership.
That's you're doing all of that stuff. Yeah. I mean, life is, if you think about it, life is so complex and messy. And it's like, mm-hmm. my mantra is, how do you get people to see what you're saying? Right. So we have an image or we have a picture in our mind that's crystal clear, or maybe it's not. But then when we communicate to other people, if they don't get it, you know, one of my other sayings is that people are not mind readers. So if they don't understand what you're saying, whose fault is that? So I love that you're using anything from color coding to creating a framework and metaphors to explain something so people get it and we're all on the same page.
Yeah. One of the things I often say is it doesn't matter what you say, it matters what they hear.
Exactly.
And I think visual leadership is a tool in the toolbox of making sure people hear what we're saying. And I love it. And those of you that are listening to the podcast and not watching the video, we do have the video up on YouTube. So I want to jump into the content of the book. It has so many models and frameworks and ways of thinking about leadership. So the first one I loved is you have three continuums that spell CAP: confidence, assertiveness, and presence. And I'd love you to share, what do those continuums mean? You know, why do we want to know them as leaders? And I really loved the 12 C's of present.
You know, in order to be effective and have I and I impact and influence, you need to have the confidence and your belief in yourself, the assertiveness to speak up and speak out, and the presence to have to command a room or to have a, to communicate with authority. So it's basically a scale where you score yourself from 0 to 10 in C, A, and P. Now the trick of this is if someone says, "Oh, I'm a 10 in all three," well, that's not good either because it's too much of a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. If you're too confident, you're overconfident. If you have too much assertiveness, you may be seen as aggressive. And if you have too much presence, you may be seen as domineering. So you really want to be in like the 7 to 8 range, right? And be able to dial it up and dial it back. So that's kind of like the trick of the model. So what's interesting when used as a 360, when people self-evaluate but have other people score them, you can see the gaps, right? Mm-hmm. I may think I have a 8 in presence, but you may say I only have a 3. So what's the feedback there? And what can I do to bump that up from a 3 to an 8? So that's in a nutshell, which is an idiom or metaphor. That's the summation. And the 12 C's of presence are, you know, what does charisma mean? What confidence, communication, and there's 12 different words to start with C that if you enhance each of those, you will boost your confidence, assertiveness, and your presence in any situation.
That's really great. I love that. And, you know, there's the traditional positional power. Your role gives you power. And then there's the personal power, which is how your ability to influence other people, mm-hmm. right? So that's the I and I piece. And then you say there's a third type of power, relational power. And I'm so into this. So I'd love you to share with everyone, what is relational power and what's its relationship with the other two powers?
Yeah, relational power is who you know and who knows you and who wants mm-hmm. to know you, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. a lot of times we think personal power very often has a negative connotation, right? Because mm-hmm. power is very often misused and abused. But if you think of power as influence, and if you the metaphor I use is look at a light socket on the wall, right? It's just potential power because it's dormant until you plug something in. And then you can light up the room or light up the world, right? So you are that outlet, right? What are you going to plug into so that you can enlighten other people and enlighten the world? So our positional power is our role and title. Personal is our communication skills and everything else. Relational power is forming coalitions. It's alliances. It's leveraging your network, right? Then I have power. I have authority. I have influence. I'm seen as a subject matter expert, a thought leader through the people I know and my access to other people. People contact me and say, "Oh, I see you're connected to so-and-so on LinkedIn. Can you introduce me?" That is perceived as power, right? Because you have the power of influence. But the key thing, as with everything we're talking about, these are all developable skills. If you have a model or framework, then it'll help us to simplify complexity and say, all right, this is what I'm missing, or this is where I'm falling short. Tell me how I could boost this to the next level.
I love it so much. And I do have a question for you. When I think of social capital, and I'm curious, is social capital related to relational power?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the people you know, your access to information or connections or having influence. And yeah, it all falls into that. Your LinkedIn network, all of these things, your personal brand. And it's all about your interactions and relationships with other people that you can leverage and be a resource to as well.
So it makes me think of teachers in school. So my coaches and leaders, right? You're leading your teachers. Thinking about what teachers have relational power, who has lots of friends and influence over other people, right? If you're trying to make a change in a school, can you get, you know, a few teachers that have a lot of relational power in the school on board with you, right? To make that change, to build momentum and make that change sustained, really.
Yeah, it could be someone who has a relationship with a writer at the New York Times, someone who can get you onto a podcast, someone who by joining forces, you could put a panel event together, right? So it's basically leveraging our relationships.
Mm-hmm. It's really great. I love that. Okay. Now I want to move into another one, your cycle of learning and development. It has four quadrants to it: behavioral, emotional, developmental, and intellectual. And you talk about, you know, terms of learning and development as a cycle, right? It's not like a line, it's a cycle. And you say to keep the wheel turning, you would need, you know, a cycle of learning. You would need all four of these. Is it accurate to say to be ready? Like, is readiness an aspect of all four of these?
Yeah, readiness definitely factors into the first one, the upper right quadrant. So the emotional component, you have to be emotionally ready to learn, willing to learn. If you think you already know this stuff, or you're the smartest person in the room, or you're burnt out, you're not emotionally equipped to take in new information, right? Because when we learn, we're adding another branch to our tree of knowledge, right? So we already know stuff and we're adding to it. But if you don't have a positive emotional state, it's not going to happen, right? So that's the first step. Then is the intellectual. We need to take in that knowledge cognitively, right? And process it and see where it fits within our previous knowledge. The developmental component is basically putting that knowledge into practice and trying it out and getting feedback or coaching sometimes and doing things through trial and error. And then the last one is behavioral. Once you solidify something within you, then it becomes part of who you are and how you do things. And you got to keep that wheel turning because you need to maintain that emotional readiness. You need to continue to add new knowledge. So as soon as you say, I already know everything, the wheel stops turning. And then one of my sayings is that the true value of knowledge is not in its accumulation, but in its application, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't keep learning, if you don't keep applying what you learn, then you become stale and outdated. That's why I keep, for people who watch, I keep this dinosaur on my desk, which reminds me to not be go extinct.
It's really great. I love that. And for my coaches and leaders listening, thinking through, this could be a great model in terms of if an educator you're working with is stuck and you keep working with them and they're not making progress, this could be a good place to look to identify, is one of the quadrants missing, right? Is there, a lack of, I'm saying readiness, but, you know, around or development around any of these quadrants? And could that be a place to differentiate support?
Yeah, that's a great insight. It's definitely a valuable diagnostic tool to figure out. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying this person isn't learning or they're stagnating, let's look at the four boxes or four quadrants and say, where are they stuck, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And how can we get that wheel turning again? So that's a great point. Yeah, Steph.
Yeah, good. All right, we're moving to another piece. I want to talk about the delegation decision-making matrix. There's two axes. One of the axes is the task importance or complexity, whether it's high or low, right? Is the task high importance or high complexity or low? And then the other axis is task frequency, how often we're doing it. Is it high or low? And the four categories, I guess, if it's high task importance or complexity and low task frequency, it's do it yourself. If it's low task importance and low task frequency, it's dump or distribute. And then if it's high task importance and high task frequency, you want to develop and deputize, right? Develop other people. And then the last one is high task frequency. It happens often, but low importance, you want to delegate that. Mm-hmm. So I'd love you to share more about this.
Yeah. Of all the models, this is the most challenging. That was a great job of explaining, by the way, because it's hard when you're not looking at it. This is the one of the more complicated ones. But the bottom line about this model is sometimes as leaders, we don't know when to delegate and when to do it ourselves. Or sometimes we feel like we're dumping on other people. Is this a developmental opportunity or is this something we're just trying to get off our plate? So the power of this model is just thinking about for any given task, what should I do, right? Mm-hmm, so like if something's a one-off and it's complicated, then just do it yourself, right? It'll take me longer to explain it to you. And especially if it's a high risk or high value, we don't want a mistake happening. So sometimes it's better, I'll just do it myself. So I could do it myself in a half hour, or it'll take me a half hour just to explain it to you. And who knows if it'll be done right. However, if it's something that needs to be done long-term over and over again, then it might be worth my time to invest in you and training you and delegating and coaching you through it so that I can then empower that deputize you or give this to you. And from there, you could run with the ball going forward.
Yeah. And I think that matrix really helps people be strategic.
Yes.
Okay. The next, we're leaping again to another model here. This is called the 5 levels of proactivity. I'm really interested in your explanation of this. The matrix has 2 axes. Again, there's the level of proactivity from, I guess, low to high, and then time, I'm assuming from low to high as well, how much time it yeah. takes.
Sure. The short version is, yeah, when something happens, like there are things that are needed in our world. Now, we could be inactive, which is we don't do anything and hope it goes away or hope someone else will do it. Reactive is we respond, you know, but when you respond and when you're reactive, you're always a step behind, which is fine if it's one thing, but when it's 3 things and 5 things and 10 things, all of a sudden you find yourself drowning, right? If you're always in catch-up mode, you never get ahead and then the quality suffers. Active is when you respond in real time. Proactive is when you're thinking and anticipating a step ahead, so you're prepared when things come along. So you know when someone says, oh, I need this from you, Becca, and you say, oh, I already did it and I just sent it to you, right? How does that make you look? You're on the ball, you're sharp, you're anticipating. There you're proactive. And super proactive level 5 is you're thinking not just 1 or 2 steps ahead, but 3 to 5 or 10 steps ahead. You're anticipating, let's say you're working in the middle of the semester right now, you're thinking about what are we going to do next fall, right? Mm-hmm. In the next academic year. So mm-hmm. we always wait, you know, again, till we're ready. We never get around to anything, right? There's a saying that mm-hmm. which can be done at any time will most likely be done at no time, right?
Yeah, I love that. So this is the last framework I want to talk about. And it's, I loved this because I think the leaders and coaches listening are really going to relate to this. So this is called the hierarchy of followership. And you say this at the beginning, the title is in the chapter, the hierarchy of followership. Is it more important to be liked, admired, respected, or trusted? And I was like, ooh, this is good. What a good question to ask. So I would love you to share. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah. Well, ideally, we would all like to be liked and loved, admired, uh-huh. respected, and trusted. But when it yeah. comes to leadership, there are some times that we need to make decisions that people may not like or people may not like us for. But if they respect us and they trust us, they will follow us. Admire is like, what is it about this person that I really appreciate? Respect is basically, do I respect what this person does? That has to do with someone's values. And trust has to do with accountability. Is their word their bond? Can you rely on them? So it's about reliability and responsibility and accountability. So ideally, we want all 4 of those things. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we try, especially new leaders, tend to try so hard to be liked that they could actually end up losing the respect and trust of mm-hmm. people because they're trying mm-hmm. to please everyone or they're indecisive. And if you tie this back to the CAP model we started out with, confidence, assertiveness, and presence, it may diminish someone's presence or your confidence in them if you don't have that trust in them.
Yeah, that's I love that. I think it's a really interesting chapter. I highly recommend folks reading it. So this has been such an interesting conversation. Todd, thank you so much for sharing you know, all these little tidbits from your book. I highly recommend folks grab the book, read it. There's lots of visuals, which I personally love. So, Todd, how can folks find you if they're interested in reaching out or learning more about what you do?
Sure. The best way is just go to my website, toddchurches.com, and it's C-H-E-R-C-H-E-S. And there you can find my TED Talk on the power of visual thinking and information about my book and what I do. My company is called Big Blue Gumball, and our motto is making the world a better place, one leader at a time. And to us, everyone's a leader. So those are the two best ways. But just definitely connect with me on LinkedIn. Just say, hey, I saw you on Beckett's show. I listened to your conversation. And because I'm always posting things related to learning. I do a lot of faculty development work at NYU. So I'm always posting things related to leadership and learning. So connect with me on LinkedIn and check out my website. My book is available on Amazon and wherever else you get your book.
And I actually want to offer something to the listeners. Sure. I'm going to put a form, a little survey in the show notes. And if you'd like to learn for us to expand on any of these topics that we touched on, to maybe have a whole episode on one of them, because I know there's a whole world on each one, feel free to fill out the survey. Let us know what topic you'd like to know more about, and we can hop back on and chat much deeper about one of them.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, thank you for having me on, Becca.
Yeah, thank you. Now, we know you got a ton of information during this episode, but if you want even more, just a friendly reminder, The Whole Educator, we do have a free resources section in our website, so feel free to head to thewholeeducator.com and click on the free resources section right at the top of the site. And there's a bunch of free downloadable resources for you, including a free ebook. And until next time, just remember, don't treat people the way you want to be treated. Treat them how they want to be treated. Take care.